Hello, and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week, we bring you stories on all things chemical, from microwaves to magnetic resonance. This week, measurement. This is Distillations. Even before John Dalton discovered the law of fixed proportions in the first years of the 19th century, chemistry was a science of measurement. Paintings of early alchemists show them surrounded by scales and weights, helping them combine precise amounts of precious substances. Much later, in the 19th century, Dmitri Mendeleev observed patterns in atomic weights to make predictions about previously undiscovered elements. Scientists today continue to depend on measurement and precision, but the standards on which they base their calculations are changing. Today, we'll explore how weights and measures may be less stable than you think. When scientists first decided to set an international standard for the weights and measures we use every day, they needed a prototype for their calculations. It had to be made of a material that wouldn't change or degrade over time. Today's element of the week is platinum. Our executive producer, Audra Wolf, explains.
The element platinum is most familiar to lay people as a luxury metal. To chemical engineers, it's a powerful catalyst. This lustrous silver-white metal doesn't oxidize easily, making it resistant to tarnishing and the perfect basis for fine jewelry. But since 1879, platinum has had a more unlikely use as the primary component of the standard kilogram. The standard kilogram is an actual piece of metal, a rod made of an alloy of 90% platinum and 10% iridium, kept under lock and key in Sèvres, France, where it's maintained by the Bureau International des Poids et Mesures, or BIPM, a sort of international bureau of weights and measures. The kilogram is the only one of the basic SI units, the international system of units commonly used in science and technology, that's still based on an actual object. Over the past century, however, radioactive decay has chipped away at the standard rod, causing it to lose at least 1/10 of a milligram of its weight. But scientists are faced with a problem here. How can they determine how much weight is lost when the rod itself is the standard unit of measurement? For several years now, some scientists have proposed that the physical standard be replaced by a more theoretical definition based on either magnetic levitation, that is, suspension by means of magnets, or the mass of a specific number of atoms in a crystal formed of pure silicon 28. Platinum may be reaching the end of its days as a gauge of measurement, but it remains an alluring, intriguing substance. And for the last year, its commodity price has averaged 60 to 70% higher than that of gold. I'm Audra Wolf with the Element of the Week.
Thanks to Hilary Domisch for her research on platinum. You can see a picture of the platinum standard kilogram mass on our website, distillations.chemheritage.org. Our international units of measurement aren't the only standards that are changing. As scientists learn more about the makeup of the elements in the periodic table and find new precise methods to weigh them, they've had to make some adjustments. In 2005, the atomic weights of 16 elements were revised, including the weights of gold, aluminum, and sodium. And in August of 2007, the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, or IUPAC, announced that it's changing the atomic weight of 5 more elements. Norm Holden works with IUPAC at Brookhaven National Laboratories on Long Island. He talked to us about these recent elemental adjustments. Dr. Holden, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Certainly for a lot of students today, one of the first experiences in learning chemistry is to confront the periodic table. And, of course, students are accustomed to referring to tables of values for fixed constants in nature. Should atomic weight, therefore, be on that chart? Should we think of it as a constant, or should we be thinking of it in very different terms?
No, it does not fall into the category of a constant. When various chemical elements are assessed around the world, we find that there are variations in the percentage of the stable isotopes. And this can cause a variation in the atomic weight.
Do we expect that new isotopes will continue to be found that will cause us to revisit atomic weights again and again?
We are continually finding new isotopes of elements, but the ones that we're finding are far from the line of beta stability, and so they are not stable isotopes, but radioactive, and they basically do not have an impact on the atomic weight, which is dependent on the terrestrial isotopic composition of the elements. Basically, those stable isotopes or isotopes with half-lives that are longer than the age of the Earth.
You have written about the increased accuracy of determination of atomic masses out to 4 figures and now out to 8 figures. How much more precise can we expect to get in this determination?
That's a difficult question to answer because it depends on the methods and techniques that are developed. On the Atomic Weights Commission, we are often asked the question that we can have tables to 4 figures, which are very often used in textbooks for high school students. We have tables to 5 significant figures, which have often been used in the chemistry laboratory. And yet, as you mentioned, we sometimes have values for the mononucleic elements, which only have a single isotope, which we can report to maybe 7 or 8 places. And we're often asked, why do you bother putting out 7 or 8 places when the average scientist or student or teacher wouldn't be interested in it? But we try to provide data for any future work that is being done, and there's no way to anticipate what kind of discoveries may be made in the future, and therefore what level of accuracy might be required.
Dr. Holden, I think we're done. Thank you very much for the interview.
Okay, and thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
That was Norm Holden from the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Most of us will never see the actual kilogram standard or notice a change in the atomic weight of nickel, but chemical reactions that we can see are happening constantly in our day-to-day lives, especially in the kitchen. In today's feature segment, Chemistry in Your Cupboard, we'll look at stoichiometry, the quantitative change of substances as they go through chemical reactions. In other words, what happens when you combine heat, time, yeast, and sugar when baking bread? Distillations producer Ann Dornfeld has this report about why stoichiometry is so crucial in baking.
American cooks, take heart. If your cakes fall flat or your bread dough refuses to rise, kitchen science writer Robert Welke says you might just be baking in the wrong country.
Probably the rest of the world weighs their ingredients in baking, partially because they have a good system for doing it.
He says the metric system is popular with overseas chefs for the same reason it's standard in the lab. It's much more precise and simple than the imperial system common in U.S. kitchens.
We have all these crazy kinds of ounces and 16 per pound and all of that stuff. So we're not in the habit of weighing ingredients. To our sorrow, really, because the only accurate way of measuring the amount of any stuff is by its weight, or strictly speaking, its mass.
I decided to test the overseas baking theory in South Africa while visiting my boyfriend's family. His nieces and I set out to make the most precise loaf of banana bread ever. What do you think, Corden? Why is it important to measure carefully?
Because if you don't, it will taste not right.
The recipe was metric. We carefully weighed the butter in grams.
So we're looking for 125. Let's see how close I got it.
Exactly.
Well, that's a first.
The girls measured exact amounts of flour and sugar. Then it was time for the most delicate measurements of all, the baking powder and baking soda. As Walkie says, this is where stoichiometry really comes into play.
Baking soda is sodium bicarbonate, and baking powder is a mixture of sodium bicarbonate with an acid, because when an acid reacts with bicarbonate of soda, it makes bubbles of carbon dioxide, and that's how you get your leavening.
If you don't add enough baking powder or soda, the reaction will be minimal. You'll end up with a chewy pancake. Walkie says the same happens if you add too much leavening. The bubbles will be so big, they'll break at the surface. Our banana bread called for 1 milliliter of baking soda, but the smallest measuring spoon we had was 5 milliliters. Our precision quest was in jeopardy. I turned to my boyfriend's mom for help.
When you measure out a milliliter, then how do you measure it?
I just take a pinch just with my fingers.
And what about 2 milliliters?
2 pinches.
As it turns out, banana bread doesn't require much more accuracy. Robert Welke says most small measurements can be done with aluminum measuring spoons, but he says some common kitchen tools are woefully inadequate.
The typical wide-mouth Pyrex cup that I'm staring at right now is a terribly bad measurement for liquids because it's so wide that a little bit of difference in height can mean a substantial amount of difference in the amount of liquid.
Welke says some standard issue lab equipment should be part of every cook's arsenal.
Well, I use graduated cylinders to make my martinis. My martini consists of exactly 80 milliliters of gin and an unmeasured squirt of vermouth. So for liquids, more chemical graduated cylinders should be used in the kitchen.
For cooks who don't have access to chemistry storerooms, Welke recommends a tool called the Perfect Beaker. It's available in kitchen supply stores. And for dry ingredients, he swears by an electronic scale. No matter how precise your measurements, Welke says in the end, successful baking relies on the same technique as the lab. The more you replicate your experiment, the more consistent your results will be. For Distillations, I'm Ann Dornfeld.
Ann Dornfeld is a reporter based in Seattle, Washington. And that's it for this episode of Distillations. This week's quotation is from Science with a Smile, the 1992 book by Robert L. Weber. It is disconcerting to reflect on the number of students we have flunked in chemistry for not knowing what we later found to be untrue. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.